Hey, today on the Cooligans, oh, it's so much fun. Mo Salah, should he be considered for the Ballon d'Or? Does he play in major tournaments? I think we talk about it. I'm pretty sure you know where we think. We also talk about Barcelona versus Atleti. And, of course, we got to talk about what's going on with Jose Mourinho, former Yahoo employee. Jose Mourinho, when he said it, Galatasaray versus Galatasaray.
Also, we're going to be joined by Paul Martin and Hillary Olsen, the box-to-box executive producers of Onside, the new documentary. Wonderful. We've been talking to a lot of people in MLS involved in the documentary. So we'll speak directly to the creators and a bunch of other stories in American soccer, including the She Believes Cup. So all this.
Also, Messi harassing one of our homies.
How dare he do
what?
That? All this and more today on the Cooligans. Feliz Día de Independencia Dominicana.
Okay.
Let's go.
We usually start with a joke. This ain't no joke, bro.
It is Dominican Independence Day, okay?
How are you celebrating said Independence Day?
I am. I'm wearing the Dominican Republic national team shirt.
Okay, there's one.
That's one way to do it, okay?
How are you honoring your peoples?
I'm calling my grandmother in DR.
Okay.
My mom is currently in DR right now, so she's nice. Probably... dancing and partying with the lechones,
the pork.
No, lechones are so in Dominican Republic. For Dominican Independence Day, we have these like it's like a carnival, like the masks.
Yeah.
And they look like monster pig kind of guys.
Okay,
or like that, and we call them lechones. I'm going to pull up some...
Why would you make something scary about something so delicious?
this is basically it. So they do big celebrations and everybody dresses up kind of like...
It's so interesting how like Creole, West African culture, all that stuff
kind of
changed a little bit in all of our cultures. But like this... If you showed this to someone, they would think this was in New Orleans or like Carnival in Toronto or like this. Look at this.
And in 2018, when I was there, I brought my then girlfriend, now wife. Mm. So it was her first time at celebrating all this stuff. And I had forgotten to mention to her that they do this thing in DR, and I don't know the reason behind it. But basically, as you're walking down like this parade or whatever, there's kids dressed up like this as well. It's not just the adults. They dress up and then all the masks and everything. And they have these balloons that they cover basically in like paper mache. So they look like these little globes. And the kids walk around with it in their hand. And they smack women in the butt with it. And it makes like a... It makes like a big popping noise.
I don't think any explanation is given for that. I completely understand why happens.
I'm showing my wife like the beautiful culture. Yeah.
Look at the tapestry of my people. Then you hear boing off a booty.
And then like a 9-year-old boy just smacks her in the butt with this thing. And she's like, "What was that?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that I forgot to mention.
You have a single tear running down your cheek. Oh, did we not talk about the booty clapping that happened?
The booty smacking? The globe in your booty.
Yeah.
Yellow, but it's going to happen. It's a thing we do. Have I looked into why it happens?
Yeah.
No, but I just accept it as part of my culture and identity.
I don't ever think. I ever thought to look it up. It just makes complete sense to me. Well, just so you know, you come around us around the lechones, bro. Independence Day.
Wear those Kim Kardashian jean butt pads to protect yourself. Yeah. And don't ask any questions.
Hike them joints up so there's something to smack. So, and if you ain't got it, you still getting balloons, bro.
Shout out to all the Dominicans out there.
Beautiful.
All the soccer loving Dominicans, all right? The 12 of us that exist. Let's do it.
Happy Independence Day, y'all.
De lo mio. We got to do it for the people.
Hell yeah.
Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Cristian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros, baby.
Absolutely thrilled for today's show. Who's on the show today? Why am I forgetting? Is anyone on the show today? What? You got to say it.
Say it into a microphone. We give you a microphone for a reason, Carter.
I don't remember.
It's the Box to Box executive producers.
The Box to Box producers for Onside. I wish I would have prepared. I forgot their names. Carter, what?
Well, all we know is that their interview is on our show, which happens to be a part of...
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll get to it. Please get the names because we spoke to them. We only spoke to them for 8 minutes.
We're so prepared, dude.
We are really a very professional outfit out here.
By the way, we have a rundown in front of us and it's empty next to the words box to box.
So it's not like, you know, we've all let each other down. It's not just
I don't know why you pointed at me, dog.
So we're going to be talking about Onside and with the producers. And they also obviously produced the F1 Drive to Survive as well. So let's start today. It starts saying Europe with Mohamed Salah because we mentioned it briefly on Monday, the Jamie Carragher comments about...
He'll never be considered for Ballon d'Or, or it's difficult for him to be considered for Ballon d'Or. Because I'm paraphrasing.
He's not playing in any serious tournaments.
He doesn't play in any major international tournaments. And, you know, shouts to Micah and shouts to Daniel Sturridge sitting next to him. We're like, have you not heard of AFCON? Because I think that's a... It seems... An entire continent gets involved in a big tournament.
And I think this is, I had seen...
What upset me the most was the reaction when Jamie goes, oh, come on. As if, stop playing around. And it's like, nah, maybe y'all don't consider it a major tournament, but it is a major tournament.
And I forgot who posted this, and I just saw their TikTok not too long ago, but somebody was just pointing out that why it's so important to have Black media in Amobi Okugo, by the way, a friend of the show, who spoke to him at TST. Amobi Okugo mentioned, he's like, this is why it's important to have Black soccer commentators to push back on moments like this, because like a lot of pundits or the panels themselves, sometimes there's not a lot of diversity there. And Jamie Carragher's comment could have just been like, oh, yeah, but yeah, so I guess it's not that serious. It's Jamie Carragher. He won a Champions League. I guess he knows what he's talking about. And it's so easy to dismiss the things that maybe are not that you're not totally focused on. You know,
I also think it's a symptom of the Premier League mindset around the sport of football, that that's the most important thing in the world, because the AFCON is often looked at as like, oh, why do some of our best African players have to go play in this tournament mid-season?
Yeah.
And, oh, this is why some managers are believed to not be buying African players, because now you have to sort of lose them for a month, you know, or maybe there's a major injury that happens at this tournament and now you lose a great player, because a lot of the other players that some of these other tournaments that these nations take part in are done in the off season. And this one, because of weather and because of many other reasons, it has to happen midseason.
Yeah.
And now there's this theory that it's like, not only is it less than the other tournaments because we don't focus on it enough, we don't talk about it enough, but now it's like, this is a hindrance to the real important stuff.
Right.
And that mindset carries through, and I think you saw that in those comments.
Exactly. And there's a couple other specifics to, you know, we're going to talk about Mo Salah and his, and, you know, basically should he be the best candidate, the first candidate for Ballon d'Or. But, you know, I've watched maybe the last, I think, 3 AFCONs. Like, really, I didn't really watch it before. And, you know, it used to be on, like, on BN, and I didn't have that
It
channel.
Used to be hard to find.
Yeah, it used to be hard to find. And now, after watching it, and you know, especially the last it was Ivory Coast Nigeria final, and Ivory Coast won, and then even the, you know, like Mo Salah hasn't won he hasn't won AFCON. Egypt.
There was an iconic moment in the previous AFCON where I believe he was up against Senegal, about to score a penalty, and there was like hundreds of lasers banging off his face.
And it's like, that's probably a big reason why he has not won it, because there are 4,000 lasers pointed at his eyes while he's trying to take a penalty.
But he was stoic in that moment.
Yeah, and at that point, I'm like, there should be something done to prevent that, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, just for the legitimacy of the competition, like, that can't happen. Even sometimes in other tournaments, when there's even one laser, people are like, Whoa, this cannot happen.
But I feel like if there's one laser, you're like, get that guy.
When
there's 1,000, you're like, what are we going to do? Kick out the fans?
I mean, put up a giant mirror behind the goal or do something. We got to come up with ideas, folks.
It'd be great if he pulls out a little mirror and he's like, how about that?
Everybody's like, oh my God.
I don't like it. Why is this happening to me?
I'm just trying to help my team win.
Yeah. Oh, my retinas are burning now.
But AFCON, more than anything, has been nothing but incredibly entertaining. Insane goals, absolute chaos sometimes. And
the drama behind it is also insane. I mean, love it.
I think the idea,
it's a rich with conversation type of
the idea. This is a very you know, not to get too political, but it's a very sort of colonial mindset of like they might be saying, like, you know, with Jamie Carragher being like, come on, there's a little bit of like, they don't know the game like we know the game.
What? A British person looking down on another nation that plays the sport?
There's a lot
That's crazy.
It trickles down, that kind of a philosophy. And it's like, if you watch the games, and I've never been to a live AFCON game, but that's also been a thing I saw in Amobi's comments of people being like, go to an AFCON game and you're not going to feel this way, because you see the not only the quality on the pitch, but then you're also seeing the fandom, right? Mm-hmm. There, and for a lot of those players, like, yeah, when Ivory Coast and Drogba, when Drogba was there or whatever, like, these are heroes to their nations.
Yep.
And they get to see them play at home in an important tournament, you know, every 2 years, and that is it's a meaningful thing. And
And the conversation of the sub-Saharan versus, you know, the North African teams, there's a lot of cool conversations that happen around it. So just looking down upon it is not the way to go, right, at least not for us.
But you know, so, and when we talk about Mo Salah, you know that mentality has to influence the Ballon d'Or voters as well, yeah, right? Because if Jamie Carragher is saying that on a big platform, you don't think it trickles in and how they're going to vote?
Yeah, of course.
A little bit. So,
and I think it does lead to the conversation, right? We were talking about how Erling Haaland should be considered for the Ballon d'Or last season, or last year, I should say. And look how many goals you score, blah, blah, blah. But could he do it in the World Cup? That team doesn't even qualify for the World Cup. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I get that how you do across all major tournaments, international, right? Everywhere you play football should count towards Ballon d'Or. But when you're having the stellar season that Mohamed Salah is having, what, 20 goals and 20 assists, if I'm not mistaken? I don't know if we need to update that. But what I see is someone who is playing
25 goals, 17 assists. He's on pace for 2020 season.
That's what it is. Okay. Yeah. He's on pace for 2020 season, which is crazy. I mean, when you're seeing how he's playing, especially at the age he is, what I'm looking at is someone who should absolutely be in the conversation. And I almost don't really care. Unless when Vinny couldn't play well with Brazil, that said to me, like, okay, that should take points away of the overall score, right?
Right.
That counts against how I view your footballing year. I don't see anything from Mohamed Salah that says this shouldn't count towards him. He can't play every position on the Egyptian team.
Right.
And he's playing so stellar. He's the best player right now in the Premier League.
Yeah, and watching the game yesterday against Newcastle, that was kind of the... I'm watching him, and I'm like, why does he... He's not necessarily the fastest, but why does he seem so calm and comfortable with every single touch? With almost every single touch suggests that he's probably going to score or get an assist. And he had the assist to Alexis McAllister. Yeah. But even in that moment, you're just like, he doesn't seem worried about the outcome. He's like, I know something positive is going to happen. And there really aren't many players that you watch in the Premier League that look like that. That they look like, hey, I'm about to make something happen without worrying, like, oh, is it the friend going to take it away from me or whatever? Yeah. And Salah reminds me a little bit of Messi's kind of mindset and confidence when he is on the ball. When Messi is, even we know he's obviously the greatest player that ever lived, but he is not like, he doesn't do stepovers. He really doesn't do anything that fancy. He doesn't do tricks. He's not Ronaldinho.
Right.
And Salah's,
there's no boom-cha-cha music over his highlights. It's not needed.
There's no music. He's like, turn the music down. You're distracting me.
You might want to pull up some light jazz because I'm about to cook you very calmly.
Okay, are we in an elevator?
bro, Muzak about to make some money.
Yo, CVS, the CVS music is bumping, bro.
Bro, it's crazy.
So that's kind of what where Salah is right now, where he is just, nobody's taking the ball from him. He is not really doing too much on the ball. He is just moving forward,
yeah,
making you worry if he's going
to
cross it.
He's the type of player that could say, like, hey, I'm going to go to your right, and I'm going to cross back to my left,
yeah,
and then I'm going to shoot, and it's going to go in. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. And there's no look on his face, like, to your point, where he's worried. I think we're all saying the same thing. We're watching a player who's not only great, not only hitting their prime at the right moment, or a little bit later than I think we all expected, because he obviously keeps his body in great shape, but we're also seeing someone who's in peak form, and their team is playing at a level that allows them to play in peak form. I mean, all of these things need to culminate for you to get to a Ballon d'Or season. He's having this moment to take that away from him, because maybe you don't personally rate AFCON a little higher, not you specifically, and the royal you. I think just sort of demises the what we're seeing here. This is the type of season we're going to be talking about in 10, 15 years, being like, yo, I saw that. I was there that season. I saw that happen.
I wonder. I disagree with that part, because I think people are not going to be talking about it because it's not stylish enough. And
I disagree. I think we're going to be talking about contract year. You know how we like mixtape Lil Wayne?
Okay, that's
you know
fair.
What I mean? Oh, mixtape Wayne was different. We're going to say contract year Salah. It hits different.
It probably has something to do with Arne Slot as well. And maybe the Salah's confidence is trickling down to the rest of the team as well. Because I remember sort of in previous years, the fans' frustration with Salah or missing certain goals.
Go back a few years before that, there was the best player in the world conversation.
Right.
Is Mohamed Salah the best player in the world? And then all of a sudden it's like, is he doing enough for the team?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's a little bit of like, you know how sometimes with like wide receivers in the NFL that like stories come out about like, you know, not a great work ethic or whatever. Sometimes it's like, you know, like the team itself plants that story.
Well, they usually do that on contract years. So they're like, well, now we got to pay.
And
press.
Salah's having such an undeniable year.
Yeah,
there's no story going to come out about what he gives to the club. That's why Carragher even is like, pay him what he wants or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it's just something that is trickling down to the rest of the team, because you also see, when Salah doesn't pass the ball and takes a shot that maybe that, you know, crashes into a defender or whatever, nobody is upset. The team is not upset. They're like, yeah, he should go for his chances, because he's going to get them from time to time.
To your point, I don't think there's anyone in the stadium, regardless of what shirt you're wearing, regardless of who you're rooting for, that thinks that's not going to go in.
Right.
So when it doesn't, you're like, well, clearly someone else's fault. You know what I mean? Like when there's like, Chelsea's probably the one team where, and maybe Arsenal right now, where Arsenal takes a shot, your first thought is, that's not going to go in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, how is that going to go? What a terrible shot. And it goes in, you're like, oh, I'm pleasantly surprised. You're not pleasantly surprised with anything Mohamed Salah's doing,
because
you're expecting greatness across the board.
Yeah.
Is he in the running right now for your Ballon d'Or? Do you think there's anyone else that competes that's having a better season, a better year, I should say, because it's a calendar year?
I don't think so. I mean, the Lamine Yamal is like the other name,
right? That's a big name. I can see that.
That's like you know.
Rafinha had a shout for a while as well.
Yeah, Rafinha is also. So it feels like it's a Barcelona player.
Yeah.
We'll see how the rest of the year goes.
I think Champions League. As Champions League comes to a close, we're going to see a lot.
Yeah. There has to be like a good season in the Premier League for Salah is not enough to do it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what trophies they end up with. Obviously, it looks like the Premier League is kind of locked up.
Yeah. it's probably there.
Arsenal's not really doing much their case.
Thanks, guys.
But so we shall see. All right, let's move on to Spain.
Let's talk about Copa del Rey.
Yeah, because obviously Real Madrid played against Real Sociedad and they won 1-0. Just real quick, shout out to Real Sociedad, the social admin. There was a TikTok that they made of, it was like a compilation of them hitting the post. And it was like an audio of a song, basically a guy who was singing a song that was about to start, but never got it. The beat didn't drop at the right time. Like he always jumped in at the right time. So he kept basically the question was that they were posing was like, why the hell didn't the ball go in?
And
they keep showing.
I think
over
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I was like, oh wait, here it comes. Yeah,
really, really funny. But the big game, the other semifinal, the first leg, Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. A game where on paper you're like, all right, this will be an entertaining game. But given Barcelona's maybe form right now, you would think that they would probably win this game.
But this is another one of the... I mean, no, this doesn't get the highlights. This doesn't get the mentions that obviously a Clásico would. Mm-hmm. But this is a massive match. You know, you've got Atlético Madrid proving this season or trying to prove this season that they belong within those upper echelons. They've changed the way they play. They're not the defensive stalwart team they used to be.
Sure.
In the last two seasons, they've really become much more offensive attacking.
They have Manchester City players that... Manchester City could use right now.
Yeah. Dude, the Manchester City B team is killing it over in Madrid. But we talked about this last time. Sorloth scoring in the last second against Barcelona to win the game was such an epic moment. This boy done did it again, but this time to draw in the first leg of the Copa del Rey match.
Right. So Sorloth has scored the most. Shout out to producer Carter for the stat. Has scored the most 90-plus minute goals against Barcelona since 2003-2004.
That's a long time ago.
So that's, and he's with three, which is...
Barcelona's actually... Pull that back out, because Barcelona's XG in the match, which you'd expect. They are a highly offensive team. They're like defending. We'll get to it. But let's everyone run up and see if the 11 of us can score. They had 3.59. So basically 3.6 to Atletico Madrid's 1.5.
Which for 1.5 for Atletico, I was like, wow, it was a good day at the office, right?
You know, I mean, used to be, right?
Used to be,
trying to be much more. But that's, the score was 4-4.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid made a lot more use of their chances.
Had 8 goals in this game. Atletico got 2 quick goals in the first minute and in the 6th minute. So it was a rough start. And then Barcelona end up within the first half, go into halftime up 3-2.
Yeah.
So this is a when I'm watching this game and I'm like, this is just, what is going on?
Yeah.
Like a team that we expect good defensive
form. It's like when boxers just kind of go for it. You know what I mean? Like they're like, we'll defend.
Well, sometimes I think when I watch games like this that are really, really crazy score lines, I'm like, midweek, how much rest did the teams get? Like, you know, because it's rare, unless it's like probably like Liverpool this year, where like on, they play Saturday and then they play Tuesday
yeah.
And both, they're like solid in both games. Like there's always, you
I think chase. In order to be a modern footballer, right? If you go back like 15 years ago, you had to play once a week.
Right.
Now, bro, you got to play a game. You have to be, your body has to be prepared to play a match every 3 days.
Which is, I mean, comical, really. Yeah. Like, I mean, even.
I've had a paper cut take me out for a solid 4 days. These guys are getting stomped on and all this.
I play in my Sunday league.
Yeah.
And.
Dude, we don't talk about this enough on this
but
show.
I'm just saying.
The real ball.
I'm not in any peak physical shape by any means.
Right.
But I play on Sunday. I usually play 2 games, each game about 40 minutes. I mean, I'm subbing in and out. I mean, how much running am I really doing? I don't know necessarily. It's hard to say.
Small pitch.
But by Thursday, I ain't ready to play another game.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's 4 days.
That's 4 days.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to at least Friday.
Right.
I'm not physically there yet. Right. I'm not, my thighs are still hurting.
Right.
I'm still recovering a little bit.
Right.
So when
we learned something new here, professional athletes more prepared to play the game than Christian Polanco.
I'm just saying they're
who
also.
Who would have thought?
By the way,
if I played a Sunday game this Sunday, I'd be ready to go in 6 months. So I'm not making fun of Christian.
I'm just saying that, you know, the when it we're both human beings.
Yeah.
You know, me and a professional athlete.
Yeah.
I'm saying there's a
Hyundai and a Bugatti are both cars, by the way.
The gap. I'm not saying there's not a gap.
Yeah. You're
I'm
a Hyundai accent compared to this.
But maybe.
You know, Veyron.
Maybe 4 days. All I'm saying is like.
Well, I mean, look, that's why you need deeper squads. You need all that.
My argument also is that if they're more rested, we're seeing better quality football.
Right.
But then.
But if everyone's a little tired, it's also pretty great.
Yeah. But I also like 8-goal games. I'm not going to not want
but
those.
But speaking of like depth, the depth you need in order to take on a match every 3 days, people were wondering why would they spend record money for Julian Alvarez from Manchester City and then go out and get Sorloth? Well, why would you have both? And I think it was actually in reverse. I think they got Sorloth first. But why would you get both? Why do you need both these players? And you're seeing like... I don't know what it is. Diego Simeone, the longest tenured coach in all of Europe, by the way. I think only Schmetzer might be the one who's... No, Peter Vermees.
Peter Vermees,
he's like the only one in world football who's been tenured longer. If I'm wrong, please correct me on that. But what we've seen from him is him almost reinventing his style of football, and he understands the sport. He understands soccer at such a deep level. He saw like, oh, okay, they're only going to congest us with more matches. These guys are going to be asked for more. We need to go out and get two, you know, top level starters at each position, basically.
Yeah.
And they did that at the striker, which right now might be the nine might be the hardest position to fill. This guy's got two starters on his team and he doesn't use them both at the same time often. And you see how essential it is for a guy like Sorla to come into the match rested, ready to go, legs not aching when everyone else is like, damn, bro, how long has this match been going?
Bringing the closer.
Yeah, yeah, dog. Fucking Sandman playing in the background, bro. Like, what you see is Sorloth comes into a game where Barcelona has been having this massive highline. And yes, every second player on this team is 16 years old, but they have this massive highline. Sorloth's like, I'm not the fastest guy in the world, but I think I could get past these guys a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when we're looking at the pass played. I forgot who the winger is that he's, the center back is making the pass to the winger, and this is where Jules Koundé slips and right. gets passed, and it's onside. But you we're looking at the pass being played right now. But if you look at the Barcelona players, look at the line, look at not only just the back line,
look at where their momentum is carrying them. Look at the back line is currently jogging up for an offside trap.
Exactly. And you see the back line and you can see the lines on the pitch itself, but look at every single Barcelona player that is not a goalkeeper is essentially within the four lines on the grass.
Right.
Of the center circle. They're basically bunched in with this very, very high line. They had the lead at 3-2 and currently have the lead at 4-3 in this moment. And are, you would think Hansi Flick would be like, hey, lock it down.
Yeah.
Let's not do any offside traps. We don't need that right now. Let's just go into the second leg.
This is Hansi Flick, though.
With the lead.
This is why Hansi Flick lasts three seasons max everywhere he goes. Because the first season, everyone's like, yo, this is electric. Uh-huh. The second season, they're like, yo, we should play a little bit more defensive sometimes. And by the third season, people figured him out. And it's like, yo, it's crazy. You're refusing to change. Because Hansi Flick is like very much like the Ange Postecoglou type.
Sure.
But one of the things that I love is when you look at a play like this, one of the first things that come to mind, De Zerbi talked about this, how he wants none of his center backs to have their shoulders squared to the goal that their team is going for. You want to be open because that shows you're ready to run back. So even if you're running the offside trap, your shoulders need to be open. Look at every one of these players. Their shoulders are more squared, including Jules Koundé, who's about to have the ball sent to his side. Their shoulders are more squared to the goal, which leads me to believe their mentality is we're going to keep running forward. We're not even thinking about the fact that the ball might come back towards us. Look at the time of this 4 minutes of extra time or a stoppage time. This is the 93rd minute.
Yeah.
This is technically the end of the match. And by the way, this team's done this to you already this season.
Yeah. Yeah. This seems like an easy opportunity to just get a win and just, you know, play it safe.
Yeah.
Of any time to play it safe. Right now is the best time to do it. And, you know, if Jules Koundé doesn't slip, maybe, you know, maybe the result it stays like this.
Mm-hmm.
But just a wild way to end the game. And Barcelona gets caught the way, you know, the remontada, right?
Yeah.
And they beat Real Madrid a couple weeks ago in the Spanish Super Cup. So look, the second leg, I think the bigger thing here is that this happened at home.
Yeah, this is at Barca's home.
At Barca's home. And it's like, this is where this should not happen at home. That's really the main thing. And so I think it's a poor result for Barcelona.
Obviously, huge for Atleti, though. But obviously, there's a second match, and it's basically nil-nil, right? It's 4-4 is how it ended. But, you know, to pay off the amount that they've spent on the squad, to get a trophy in a season where Barca and Real Madrid are such heavy favorites would be huge for Atleti, so I'm happy for them.
All right, so yeah, we'll be on the lookout next week for the second. Is the second leg next week? I think it is, right?
April 2nd.
Which is totally makes sense.
Yeah, that's how the sport works.
Okay.
All right, so we'll see you guys in a few months. All right, we'll finish this
Champions
up.
League, I believe, is next week, right? I think Champions League comes back next week.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Last thing before we get to our interview with the Box to Box producers, Jose Mourinho's in the news, and you know it's always for a good reason.
Yeah, this guy, he knows how to get his name in the headlines. This one, maybe not. He's not so happy about.
Headline is Galatasaray accused Mourinho of quote unquote racist statements and vowed to take legal action.
They vowed to take criminal proceedings. They said something like of that nature. They feel like this is. Goes against, and look, I think the three capital teams, right? Fenerbahce, Besiktas, and Galatasaray, heated rivalry. They love playing these games back and forth. But this feels like a moment where it feels like, you know, we're at a moment where it's a bit of an impasse. Like, oh, did this go too far?
Yeah, and the specific, ever since Mourinho got to Turkey and been the coach of Fenerbahce, there's always been, I mean, anywhere he goes.
The first thing he said was, yo, my son, nobody watches the Turkish league.
Mm-hmm.
It smells bad, which is, it's a whole league. I don't know how it smells bad. But he was kind of talking about how, like, we need to do better, but they don't, a lot of his stuff isn't taken in context always, right? Because he says such wild stuff in the middle that you kind of just take that part. And even that, I'm like, maybe it's delivered a little too harshly. And this feels like another situation where it's, you know, what you're being accused of, I don't think. I mean, what's his name? He's being accused of racist comments.
Right.
Said Galatasaray either equalized or won the match on a goal. I can't remember.
I don't remember exactly.
But he said that he kind of had a bunch of stuff to say, but he said that the Galatasaray players were all jumping like little monkeys.
Yeah, which is...
immediately harkens to some racist thought.
It was nil-nil. He was saying it for every referee decision that went through.
Got you. It was nil-nil. So this is for referee decisions.
Right. So I guess their reaction. So he was upset at how the bench was reacting for the opposing team. And this is, you know, I think this is just kind of, do I think Jose Mourinho is a racist person? And did he mean this in a derogatory way to try to, you know, be just be insulting about black people or these black players in specifically? No. I don't think that, but I do think he is loose with his language, things can get I'll say this, it's something that even for me, as you know, my son is almost 2 years old, and I
see, he's saying some wild stuff already.
I know it's getting crazy, bro. I'm just glad he's not in Turkish football. know? it's that. I read a lot of like children's stories, and like I read a Curious George. We got him like this like picture, like a picture book, but it's more like it's like a thing that it connects to your iPhone and it projects. It's like a, remember the three, I don't remember what they're called, the
TikTok thing.
I don't even, I forgot what it was called.
Yeah, I'm glad for our audio listeners. We're just making onomatopoeia sounds.
But there's one like that for iPhone, and it projects basically the book onto the wall. And we got a Curious George one, and the Curious George one is like, you know, the man in the yellow hat goes to Africa to save this monkey.
Yeah,
and I'm like, what the hell is like? This is I understand that like. Surfacey, this seems like a normal, it feels fairly normal, I guess, but it's like so coded in like what it like this, the man in the yellow hat is saving the monkey from this uncivilized landscape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like things like that where I'm like, it's not.
There's a Disney exec right now being like, no one would ever sneak messaging into children's
stuff. I'm like, it's not racist, but it's like weirdly coded.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why.
You didn't need to do all that.
Right. And that's what I think Mourinho sort of like. And this is a common phrase, like jumping like monkeys and whatever. And it's a common thing in even children's language.
Like, yeah, but I also think because of how derogatory he's been, this felt like the straw that broke the camel's back, correct, in a sense.
Yeah, he's already said much more derogatory things.
So now this is like Exhibit Z, you know what I mean? And I want to say Didier Drogba, right? A lot of questions have been asked of Didier Drogba, a Galatasaray legend, right? And someone who played under Jose Mourinho. He came out and said, "Dear Galatasaray, you know how proud I was to wear the yellow and red jersey Also, my love for the most decorated club in Turkey. We all know how passionate and heated rivalries can be, and I've been lucky enough to experience it. I've seen the recent comments about Jose Mourinho. Trust me when I tell you, I have known Jose for 25 years, and he is not a racist. And history, past and recent, is there to prove it. Let's focus on our game, support our brilliant Lions, and let's win the league and get close to our five stars. How can my dad be a racist? Come on, guys. Now, I love the fact that people are stepping. If you know him in the past, sure, he did a joke with being a legend from Galatasaray, someone who those fans really connected with. It's great that you're stepping up and defending.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, no, he's not racist. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's like, all right, you could be derogatory, you could be funny, you could be all these things. When you step over that line and when you say something that people are like a little uncomfortable with, just like any comedian would, if you're on stage and you're having a great set and then you say something, people go, ugh, you know, you should think to yourself, hey, you know what? That might not be the best way to say that. Maybe I should change that wording around joke. And I think this is one of those moments where you say, hold your hand up and go, you know what? I didn't use the right terminology. I wasn't being racist. I've never disrespected those types of people. I would never disrespect you. I would never disrespect this. I would never be, you know, derogatory towards anyone. That said, I didn't say that right, you know?
Yeah.
And then this is a way you got to hold your hat in your hand a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little, with the way Mourinho carries himself in general, it's a little bit like it's generally disrespectful.
Yeah.
And he gets away with a lot.
If he was racist, would he have been in a Stormzy video?
Hey, case closed.
Yeah, man said in a Stormzy video, bro.
So let's wrap there.
Should we go to the wide shot?
Yeah, we're nice. Let's get to our conversation with
Paul Martin and Hillary Olsen.
The OGs, the friends. By the way,
we knew that. We were just making sure Carter knew that.
Yeah. We talk every day.
Yo, Hill, your interview is about to be on right now, bro.
So here goes. Our conversation with the onside producer.
I mean, look, we've had players on this show, but mm-hmm. We got actual like front office. We got execs, corner offices.
The content creators themselves, right?
This is like EP level. Like,
yeah.
Bring me the content, and if I don't like it, you're fired. Like that level. Who I've always wanted to be.
No, but the visionaries behind this project, Onside, the documentary coming soon, February 21st. That is again.
You also know him from Formula Survive to Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
You also know him from one of my favorite documentaries, Box to Box. Also produced Exit Through the Gift Shop, one of the greatest documentaries I've ever seen.
Legendary stuff. So excited to be joined by Paul Martin and Hillary Olsen. Thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Thanks guys.
Absolutely. So I hear an American accent, I hear a British accent. Were both of you soccer fans already?
I mean, growing up in the UK, I played soccer from, the earliest possible.
Yeah.
And played till my legs couldn't take it anymore. So, yeah, I was just a huge soccer fan. It's probably the only sport I sort of really was ever any good at.
Right.
And had a bunch of mates that became professionals and, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, for me, this was like the easiest sell of all time of coming to the MLS and, follow the teams around.
Of course. Great. Nice. Who do you support? We got to ask.
Well, unfortunately, I'm a Southampton fan. Which is,
okay. So, rough.
Yeah, thank you for Theo Walcott. I'm an Arsenal supporter.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we took him back as well.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
when
his
knees were gone.
Yeah, he was fully gone.
He was gone.
I'm an Everton fan, and we had Theo Walcott for a little bit.
Yeah, Theo Walcott. So, we've got the stages.
When did you get the old
What's your fandom like as far as when it comes to soccer?
I played soccer as a kid, so I really liked it. It was just growing up in the United States. I think it was just like really fun to do that. But when I got brought on to Box and we were doing this project, I was super excited because I've always loved soccer. It's really easy to watch. There's great stories, and it's just an exciting sport.
Yeah, that's what I'm want to ask about. As far as the, we're soccer sickos, as they say here. We're obsessed with it. We're gonna watch, regardless if the stories are being told around the game. And we've been doing this for 10 years. And even from our perspective, right, we're usually try to highlight the humorous parts of the game. Mm-hmm. But then the dramatic parts of the game, especially for the American soccer player or the player that plays in America, is so undertold and untold, right? And so, even just watching the trailer for Onside, I'm like,
I love the fact that the drama around the sport is captured amongst these, especially individual people and players. So what was the, did you have any feeling of like, oh, we have to try harder to show that there is drama around the sport, or did it feel like it just came naturally?
I think it came naturally. I mean, I think it's really interesting what you're talking about. I think, you know, growing up in kind of the UK, it's sort of like everything about America is like, we are the best. We are the NFL, right. We're the best. Basketball, we're the best. And it's funny. It's like soccer's the one thing that there's an insecurity that Americans have about.
Well, that's the like, way people with your accent talk to us about it, I think. You
know, and so I think that it's, you know, I think it was really interesting to go into the MLS and be able to showcase all that stuff that is there. Like, number one, these players are really good, right? They're really, really good. The stadiums are really packed. They're as passionate and they're as, you know, they're as crazed about winning as players in the Premier League or players in the... But it almost felt like it just needed this vehicle for almost for people to say it out loud, you know, of like, listen, we are, you know, we're really good at soccer and we've got a really great league going on here and we want people to see it. And I think it was great for us, you know, to be able to showcase that.
You guys changed America because you made us care about Formula One. Right, Americans only cared about racing if it was turning left, and you guys said, "What if we show you the guys who go right?" And we're like, "Oh!" But I think how you did that is you made us humanize the person inside the mask, right? By sharing the personalities and the struggle and the tribulation. Drivers in F1, you feel like it's a rich guy sport. And then all of a sudden, you're like, even though there's a different type of league that they're in financially, or the guy who owns it, or this or that, the emotions are the same that we all share. You guys are now trying to do that with MLS, and you're getting an opportunity to share those stories. Talk a little bit about the reaction from F1 and what you're hoping to achieve with Onside, which we're really excited about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we obviously, everything we do gets comparison to kind of Drive to Survive and the effect that that had on kind of Formula One. I mean, I honestly, whenever we go into one of these things, I try to put the, hey, we're going to do a show that's going to change the way people see X, Y, Z. I try not to think about that ever because you'll tie yourself up in knots. I'm always like, the only thing that we need to be focused on is telling real, authentic stories that people hopefully will kind of resonate and be attracted to. And if we do the best version of that, all that other stuff hopefully should come where, you know, there'll be people, you know, in the country that have never been to an MLS game that may see the show and say, hey, that actually looked pretty cool. I might go and check out the game. That's great. But we don't sit there going like, how are we going to get more fans to go to MLS games?
Yeah.
We're just like, let's just make the best show that we can and find the best characters and do it with authenticity and, you know, do it with kind of drama. And I, you know, I believe that, you know, great stories and great characters are, you know, are the best way to get people engaged in anything. You know, if you tell someone a great story that there's a character I really like or I really hate or I really kind of resonate with, you just automatically want to find out more. You just automatically like, well, I might check this out or I might go there. So I honestly don't think about that stuff because, you know, also Drive to Survive was, you know, the right show at the right time and COVID was going on and there's a bazillion reasons that blew up in the way that it did that can never be kind of replicated, you know. But what can be replicated is that we can go into these worlds and just make a really great show.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we've done.
Because I would have been like, I'm a magic maker. You know, I'm the opposite. I'd be like, everything I touch turns to gold. You know, bring me lacrosse next. You know?
When it comes to the specific people featured, were there any that stood out as far as whether it was maybe an emotional storyline or something that you were genuinely surprised by?
I mean, I think there's a lot of the stories are do stand out, which is why the episodes end up coming together the way that they did, and they're really strong. I mean, I think if you look at the Kevin Sullivan episode, it's like such a special and unique story, and the access and where we were in terms of time and telling his story is fantastic. I think it just depends on kind of what lens you're looking through in a particular story, quite frankly.
Got it. Well, how did you choose the folks that are associated with the project?
We sort of, you know, we were down here last year. We met a bunch of players. We met a bunch of, then we went out to different teams and it just, you know, it sort of reveals itself. I mean, Kevin Sullivan's a great example of, you know, I think sort of midway, you know, through the year, I think it was some of the MLS was like, oh, have you heard this story about there's this 14-year-old kid and he's going to play for Philadelphia? And I was like, 14-year-old kid's going to play professional? Are you joking? Like, oh, I'll get my boots and I'll kick him. Yeah, I'll go. Have that reaction. You're like, there's no way a 14-year-old kid's going to play. And then you see him play and you're like, okay, he's really good.
Yeah, get this adult out of the way and bring out the 14-year-old.
Yeah. And then you meet him and you're like, oh, shit. I've never met a 14, 15-year-old kid like him. Yeah. Like, it's extraordinary. And so you suddenly, you're like, well, he has to be in the show. We have to find a way for him to be in the show. And then you meet the family and you're like, oh my God, this is like producer's dream, the whole kind of Sullivan, you know, story. So, you know, it's just things like that. They sort of, you know, it's like, again, to go back to Drive to Survive. When we made Drive to Survive, we didn't cast Gunter. Gunter was just there doing his thing. It was just nobody had ever pointed the camera at him.
Right, right, right.
It was the same here. It's like, these characters are there. You've just got to kind of put the mic and point the camera at them and get them in the right moment.
And let them go.
When it comes to the people involved in the documentary and everyone you spoke to, I know this has happened for us where, you know, we've interviewed, you know, hundreds of players on the show. But there's a, regardless of, even if they play on a rival team, you develop an emotional connection where you just want them to succeed in life and do well. Did that happen for you guys? Do you have a deeper connection for the sport, the league, and the players after finishing this project?
I mean, I would definitely say yes. It was very exciting, especially towards
the
end of the season. Who
did you love? You hated and then you loved at the end of it.
On this show... I don't know that there's anyone that Paul I hated. Paul Martin. No, okay. Paul Martin. I was like, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I got really invested in like Matt Miazga's story. Yeah. Oh, you're thinking of Tkachuk.
Oh,
for hockey. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. We can, and they're we all can really awesome. But like, the Atlanta stuff.
That's like awesome.
The Atlanta stuff.
Yeah, it was crazy to watch awesome. That whole thing kind of come to fruition with the Miami. And we were with them the entire time. And they were like, don't go away. You're our luck charms for being here, which was kind of awesome. Yeah. You know,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I know we have to let you go, but I got one question for you. You're a Southampton supporter. If one of the players had a Pompey dot, would you have nixed him from the documentary?
100%. Yeah, 100%. It was. We were here last year. And we met Yoshida.
Yeah.
And he played for Southampton for years. And I was like, I literally was like, it's Yoshida. And he's like, and then I was at the game at the final, and Yoshida was warming up. And I was like, again, I was like staring at him. I was like, Yoshida. And he's kind of looking at me. And I think he sort of half recognized me from sort of this time last year. And he sort of gave me a nod right before the end. I was like, I got the nod from Yoshida.
You're tapping your friend.
Yeah, got the nod from Yoshida. Yeah.
I'll introduce you guys if you want.
Yeah. But Pompey is always on every show. Anyone Portsmouth related is always off limits.
Yeah.
100%.
I love that. I mean, the tribalism runs deep. It's incredible.
Well, it's an honor to have you guys on our show. I'm really excited to watch this.
Yeah. So best of luck going forward. And obviously February 21st onside, we're all going to be watching. So thank you guys for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks,
guys.
Thanks for having us.
Next one, Hooligans. Laugh to Survive. I'm just saying.
Hey, you just spoke into reality. It's called manifesting.
You know, telling soccer jokes throughout the country. Yeah. It's just, I mean, we have to make the pitch at the very least.
Exit through the thrift shop. I got a bunch of them.
Cheers,
thank
guys.
You.
Thank you.
Thank Thanks, you.
Guys.
Hey, what a great interview.
Shout out to Paul and Hill.
Yeah, the homies. Paul Martin, Hillary Olsen of Box to Box Productions. Obviously, we talked about it, but Drive to Survive was great. Can't wait to finish watching all the episodes of Onside.
Exactly. So,
and thanks to them for having us interview everybody. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. That is the collection that we did 7 interviews that Apple helped us set up.
Yeah.
To talk about the documentary and stuff like that. So, please. So again, thank you to everybody who helped make that happen. All right. And shout out to the Yahoo crew and staff. Carter was there.
Adi was there. Adi. I can't remember the videographer's name.
Ismail.
Yes, homie.
My boy from Spain.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. From Barcelona.
So, we had a great time out there. And, I'm glad that can come to its conclusion.
fusion.
We had a great group dinner too. We went to the Rayos in Miami, which not always great when a New York restaurant goes to Miami. That for I think Miami food is pretty.
I didn't even know the restaurant existed. I just knew the tomato sauce that I would get at Wegmans.
You didn't know there was a Rayos?
I didn't know there was a Rayos.
You're the one from New York. You got to know this stuff.
I go to Rayos.
It's the tables. The tables are owned by the locals. You have to get the reservation from the people.
I go to Serafina.
Oh. Okay. We got to talk. I need a full list of places you think are good. And then I'm going to make a lot of red marks like when you send a contract to a lawyer.
Serafina's delicious.
No,
what are you talking
about? It's a chain, bro. We don't do chains.
Rayos is a chain.
It is not. Carter also hitting the thumbs down, by the way. Yo, your food
Rayos. Serafina doesn't sell their pasta sauce at Wegmans. All right. So I'm just saying.
You gotta let them get their beak wet. You know what I mean? No, Rayo's one of the original Little Italy's.
I enjoy both of the restaurants.
Actually, Al Pacino, born and raised right around Rayo's. It's on 117th.
Okay. Yes. He was born in a vat of pasta sauce. Yeah.
Honestly, do we have any evidence to disprove that?
Okay. Now, some people do water births. No. Al Pacino did a pasta birth. Yeah,
there wasn't a midwife because they was all banging. None of them were mid, bro.
Anyway.
All right. They got best red parmesan.
let's wrap up with some American soccer news.
Yeah, baby.
In this segment. Just a little recap of everything going on. First, I know people love hearing about Lionel Messi, but Lionel Messi received an undisclosed fine after for violating the hands to the face, head, or neck of an opponent policy following the conclusion of Inter Miami's match against NYCFC.
Now, let me tell you something. This hits a little bit close to home because this was one of our boys.
This was we alluded to it a little bit. We didn't know exactly what. I'm honestly surprised there was a fine at all. I didn't think.
Well, it was caught on camera.
It was caught on camera, but still, it's messy.
Yeah.
It's untouchable.
Well, it's an undisclosed fine. So it's probably like, you're going to get 25 cents less than your next check. You know.
Hey, okay. You're going to miss those $3 that we took, Lionel. But yeah, if you didn't see it, he walks up to Mehdi Bellucci. He's saying something. They're having a conversation, you know, amongst training staff. And then right there, Messi leans in and really kind of...
He covers his mouth, but you can tell what he's saying is pretty aggressive. He leans forward. He puts his hand on the back of a person's neck, which is like not uncommon, but at the end, you can see he tenses up a little bit,
like he's talking to his child.
Yeah.
Being like, hey, stop doing that.
Right. And he kind of reacts like, get off me. But I still think, so Mehdi Bellucci was standing by himself. That's the person we're talking about. Mehdi Bellucci, the homie, one of the assistants at NYCFC, also played at New York City FC.
Yeah.
Also played at Rebels before that with Thierry Henry. So he's got a lot of experience with big names. he had his hands in his pockets and he kind of said like, hey man, like, you know, this is right after Messi was very upset about some of the calls. And he was talking to the refs and he received a yellow card, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So this right after that, you can tell he's still upset as he's walking away, saying some stuff. And you can tell Mehdi Bellucci kind of gives him like, hey, man, it is what it is. You're not going to get every call. That's kind of the look. I don't know what was said.
I don't know what was said either. We may never know. But
the look was like, you don't get every call. And Messi was like, do you know who I am?
Watching this back, it looks like Mehdi is not really even addressing Messi at all. Right here. He's not looking at him. He's looking at the other guy.
I think that's another Miami coach, maybe? Or is that an NYCFC coach?
I can't tell.
That comes over to be like, don't disrespect Messi. Like, talk to me. Like, if you're going to talk like that, talk to me. Kind of. That's the vibe I'm getting.
I didn't get that at all. Yeah. I don't think Mehdi Bellucci was disrespectful to anyone at any moment.
Nah, dude, I don't. Do you not remember the beginning of the video? Like, you got to see the full thing. There's another camera. Look at the guy on the left. You see where the photographer is taking pictures? There's a camera from that angle where you could see the beginning, how this started. Mehdi's got his hands in his pockets, and he kind of shrugs and is saying, like, hey, man, hey, you're not going to get every call. That's the vibe. I don't know what was said. And Messi starts to kind of walk away and turns around and goes, wait, what did you say? Yeah. I'll have this conversation with you. So this started with a,
He's being like, bruh, like, you're not going to get a recall. That's the only thing I can assess from the body language.
All speculating. I don't know. I don't know exactly what made Messi come back right here. Why is he coming?
But this started before that.
I understand that. But I'm just saying he's still, now he is fined for it. Messi didn't, Belucci didn't receive a fine.
No, but see, and the reason you're saying he didn't react to it or he's not reacting is I think you don't, the zoom in circle moves away too quickly. If you look at right at the end, you'll see Medi kind of looks at him and kind of shrugs away, being like, bro, watch right here. All right. So look, grabs the neck, saying something, makes it tighter. And watch right there. See how he turned around? He turned to look at him and be like, yo, bro, don't squeeze my neck. Kind of.
Of course. Yeah, that's totally understandable.
So he's having the conversation.
Yeah.
Not just specifically Messi, but it started with just Messi. And then these assistant coaches came by.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I've seen the whole thing like the Zapruder film, bro.
So Messi and Suarez received a fine as well. Suarez for I think arguing with the refs or something along those lines. But yeah, this is I mentioned on Monday. I'm just saying.
I think grabbing somebody's neck is a little bit disrespectful. Everything else, I'm fine with all of it.
Sure. I don't know. I think at the very least, you know, this is the first game of the MLS season, and Messi is already at this level, getting a yellow card, getting fines. More of this
Yo,
year.
Yo, Angry Messi, kind of fun,
okay,
bro.
Okay, no international tournaments to worry about. Just play your games. Yeah. You're an Inter Miami player. Let's see how it goes. So lovely to see.
Messi involved in a lot of stuff. This is the opposite. You heard about the ref who asked Messi for his kit swap.
Yes, yeah, which we mentioned on Monday, but now we know that
he got in trouble for it.
So the referee is suspended for 6 months.
6 months.
Six whole months. I mean,
is that paid? Is it like when a cop gets it? Because it might be worth it, bro.
I would imagine. Nah.
Yeah.
But
you ain't doing many games.
6 months is, we're not playing.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a significant ban.
This is not a little pow pow.
Yeah. This is for real. This is not undisclosed. It discloses joint.
Sure.
Six-month suspension, which is rough. That's rough for
especially
a referee.
For, you know, and this is not to the degree of like the David Coot kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm just referees and FIFA and everything. They're all like, hey, there's not going to be any funny business.
There's a decorum that's expected of the referees.
Whether you're doing cocaine or asking, for Messi's jersey.
Right. Or filming content with dude you just met at a bar where you call a coach a jerk or something. None of that. The decorum is important. I think a lot more scrutiny is being placed on referees as of late.
Sure.
Not just on the pitch, but what happens around it. Where in the past, you know, we didn't know much about referees. Now we're learning a lot more. This is a situation that's just untenable. You cannot ask a player for a kit swap. That's, again, something you probably could do in the tunnel. But to do it calls into question the integrity of the whole.
In the tunnel as well.
I'm sure. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, away from cameras, we wouldn't have known about it.
Yeah.
This might have happened before. We might not have known about it. There was a famous, it's some Asian country, I can't remember, where a long tenured referee was retiring and they set up a guard of honor for him. And a player at the end took his shirt off to receive one last yellow card from that referee and they kind of shook hands. There's some camaraderie with the referees and players, especially if you're long tenured.
Yeah.
So I get that. I get that there's, you know, they're on the pitch with you. You talk to them. Maybe they're not friends, but they're closer to being friends than the average fan or the average person is. I get that there's going to be some of a connection there. You could probably in the tunnel be like, hey, man, I'll probably never ref one of your games. If you have an extra kit, I'd love it. Do you want a ref kit? And maybe it's funny. Maybe you take a picture. Maybe you don't. I'm sure stuff like that's happened in the past, like a player is retiring or something. We're not usually, we don't know about it, right? For the reason being, you don't do it on the pitch like an idiot.
And it's CONCACAF Champions Cup. It's the first leg. It's not a charity game.
Yeah. This is like a real ass competition.
It's a real game. It's kind of ridiculous. So
you heard Messi's going to play in Jamaica?
Yeah. Obviously, so Inter Miami beat Sporting Kansas City in both legs.
Right.
And I did see.
It's like a 3,000 seat stadium usually. I might have those numbers wrong, but they're going to the national stadium, which is closer to 30,000.
Right. I think it's 35.
Yeah. Which is, this is incredible.
Yeah.
I know we get mad when MLS teams do it, but this is amazing. Is
it Cavalier? I believe
it is. I believe it is.
The name of the team. It's just going to be dope. Has Messi ever been to Jamaica?
I'm sure he's been to Jamaica.
I don't think he's been to Jamaica ever.
Why would he not go to Jamaica?
I have no reason to think he...
But Imagine he does like cruise boat stuff where he comes out, he got that one braid. You know what I mean?
Looks like a 9-year-old white girl on vacation. Yeah.
What? It's allowed. I was told it's allowed.
What does appropriation mean? Yeah, yeah. I'm just here to have fun. Yeah. So, CONCACAF Champions Cup has been entertaining to say.
Should we go to this game?
To the Jamaica game?
Yo!
Yo, Yahoo! You want to cover it?
Give us the credit card.
Yeah. Why can't we go to Jamaica? I've never been to Jamaica. Have you been?
You've
to
never
Jamaica?
Been to Jamaica?
I've never been to Jamaica.
Bro, shouts to Kingston, shouts to Negril, bro. I've been to Jamaica a couple times.
Okay.
It's a fun time. Let me tell you. No braids in my hair either, bro.
I'm going to get a braid in my hair.
I went on a cruise boat once, and there was a kid on the cruise boat who thought he was like a rapper, and he wasn't. He was just like this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was from Miami, fair skinned dude. He had like the part down the middle and he got his hair braided on both sides, and he thought it was popping. He thought like, oh, when I get on this boat, true, I'm gonna be the guy. Bro, this dude got roasted everywhere he went. It was the best.
Lovely.
Oh, imagine that happens to Messi.
So Inter Miami beat Sporting Kansas City. Uh-huh. RSL loses to Herediano. Right. I was watching that game last night. LAFC wins against Colorado.
Oh, Herediano. I know how I know that. Remember our friend that we met in Costa Rica? She used to play for the women's team.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Jessica Quiros. Yeah,
yeah.
Name is.
Yeah. Those games were, and Seattle crushed Antigua, Guatemala. So the other, what was the next thing I was going to mention? Oh, yeah. She Believes Cup.
Yeah.
We'll wrap there. Japan.
It's a rough one.
Wins the She Believes Cup for the first time in their history. They break the streak of the United States that won 5 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
We have
Their last three losses were to the USA.
Producer Carter with the great stat. First loss to Japan.
Stat man Carter over here, bro.
First loss to Japan since the 2011 World Cup. Well, I remember that. That was an
11 game
one.
Unbeaten streak against them, which is kind of crazy. Or is it in general?
This Japan.
You have a microphone. Don't forget it. You're allowed to talk, Carter.
This Japan.
We took the electrodes out of your seat, so we don't buzz you anymore when you speak.
This Japan was a very different Japan that I think we're used to watching. I don't know if you got a chance to watch their other games at She Believes Cup, but they were spectacular. They look, and maybe this is.
They play like a club team.
Yes,
it's kind of crazy,
and maybe it's a little bit of, you know, the U.S. team, which I'm like comparing them to essentially. This is not the strongest roster. This is not the first team that Emma Hayes would pick.
No, but this feels like an Emma Hayes type team. Like she specifically picked these players, and I know it's not.
Yeah, and their players shine. I would say the rising star here, Ali Sentner. She scored in this game. She scored a banger.
If I'm not mistaken, Ali Sender wasn't she wasn't in a lot of the youth setup for the women's national team. She didn't get into a lot of the youth.
I don't know.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe this is it. Sure. I remember being asked on Morning Footy a while back. She was one of the ones who was called up and
had, kind of like overlooked.
Yeah, yeah, overlooked in the past. I specifically chose her as who I was most excited to look for, because I think she plays the game in such an exciting way, and I think she looked really good in club form, and to see that it's paying dividends just feels great, because you would imagine the men's game, you would assume there's a lot of players that slip through the cracks, but in the women's game, there's so much more attention being put on the youth players in the women's game that you think, oh, no players slip through the crack. The best ones make it to the top. To see that there's still some players, there's still some talent out there that maybe are late bloomers or maybe never got that look when they were younger is so exciting. To think there's even more talent in this country that we're not finding is crazy.
Yeah, and credit to Emma Hayes. I mean, this roster was a lot of young players, and you know, players get with very few caps or getting getting real big time experience that isn't, you know, leading up to a World Cup or not leading up to the Olympics and stuff like that. Effectively the second half, Japan, once they take the lead, this is where you say, if you're Emma Hayes, you say, okay, can these players figure this out? Can they figure out defending this low block from Japan? And I mean, I'm putting on the screen just one of the moments towards the end of the game. This is in the 94:03 in the 95th minute with 5 minutes of stoppage time, and the U.S. is really, they're trying to come up with anything. They're finding it difficult to just get shots on target.
Yeah,
and
they're defending with five, as you can see here.
Yeah, but this play, and I'm highlighting. I drew that red line to show clearly that that's the offside line. Because
This red line.
I drew this red line.
Okay.
And I put the, and you see the player.
Are you qualified to do that?
I mean, I did my best, but it's, I looked at the line on the pitch of the grass.
You are matching the line.
I tried my best. I mean, yeah. And on the iPhone, it does like a straight line for you. I didn't draw it, right? So I was just like, I'm watching the game, and this is Jenna Neiswanger at the bottom of the screen. And she receives this pass. I don't know if it's from Coffee. I forgot who sent the pass in. Or I think it might have been Jaden Shaw. Sends the pass in and sends a cross to Lynn Williams that's in the middle of the box, basically at the penalty spot, to just bang it in and tie the game.
Right.
This was called offside.
Crazy.
This was called offside. And some people are like, oh, you're complaining.
Wait, hold on. What about when it went to VAP? What happened?
VAP?
Yeah, video assistant Polanco. What happened? Yeah. This is what video I see here.
Yes, that's right.
It's you and Mateo.
I had my dual monitor set up with my 2-year-old son.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey.
The line is a bit off. Now, if we go by my iPhone.
This is, okay. And then we're looking, you see the lineswoman. She's at the top of the screen right next to the red line.
Right. From her vision, that is a straight line from player to player.
But she is.
She's not on the right.
She doesn't even see Jenna Neiswanger. She does not even.
No, she does. She sees it in line with the defender. Do you get what I'm saying? Because her vision is now off kilter. Because she's not in line with the last defender.
She is not. She's ahead of the last defender.
Which you're not supposed to be. You're supposed to be in line with the last defender.
Okay, yeah.
I don't assume there's another defender. Not that it would matter, but no. There's no.
This was called offside.
The lines person is supposed to be in line with the last defender. That correct. Is why it's such a difficult job, because you're constantly running in place of the last defender. So your vision should be straight across the pitch. Your vision should be the straight line, which you can draw either legally or illegally, as you did here on your iPhone.
This was just a ridiculous. I just couldn't believe that she raised her flag.
Yeah,
in this situation, this
a back
she
ball.
Is she is a 2 yards onside.
She is about three people shoulder to shoulder onside.
Crazy, because again, this could have led to the tying goal. It wouldn't have led to the U.S. winning the She Believes Cup, because they would have been on goal differential.
It would have equalized. It would have equalized. Which seems like an important move.
Well, at the very least, it would have not been a loss to Japan in this game. But again, credit to Japan. They were fantastic. And the midfielder who plays in NWSL, I forgot her name. Apologies. She is, who is it? Nagano? She plays in Liverpool. She doesn't play in NWSL. Yui Hasegawa.
She plays at City.
She is, I'm not even like exaggerating.
Right.
She is Iniesta. Like, she is just.
You don't play on City, man or woman, if you ain't techie. The midfield is
she
crazy.
She was getting out of double teams, pressure. There was nothing that any U.S. player could do. And it just sort of shows.
This is what the U.S. need, man. We need like a couple more Rose Lavelles.
that's kind of it. Like,
it really is.
And I don't think the U.S. loses to this team if it's the first team.
Of course not.
It's Sophie Smith, Trinity Rodman. And I think the pressure would have just been a little too much for Japan. But it does say something about like the next crop of players.
We talked about this in the last major competition that, you know, the world, not I wouldn't say catching up, but there's real competition around the world. The USA don't have it as easy as they may have had in the past, where it was like one or two players in another nation stood out, and they could ball out, and they could beat you. But for the most part, across the board, the median wasn't where the US is at. that's that that gap is really starting to close like crazy.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's, you know, is it disappointing that the U.S. didn't win the SheBelieves Cup? They win it all the time. Sometimes this tournament doesn't always feel like it's a, quote-unquote, like really, really
it
important.
Has gold cup feeling to it sometimes. Yeah, you're yeah. Like, but, all right.
Because it always...
Does everyone take it as...
It's, the game, know. It's they're played in the U.S. It's, you know, it's a, yeah. It sometimes feels like a like tour. A
yeah.
A tour of the U.S. It. Teams yeah. or whatever. But no, credit to Japan. I mean, there was late in the game... I think it's Kumagai. She had a collision. Lindsay Heaps, who yeah. formerly Lindsay, right? She.
Oh, you said Lynn Williams is Lynn Biondolo.
Biondolo. Apologies. Yeah, Biondolo. Yeah, yeah. We're all adjusting.
We're getting accustomed.
She went up for a header in the box, and usually there's like head to head collisions. It was teeth to head collision. And Kumagai got the worst of it. Blood just all gushing down her
yeah,
face.
Yeah, head bleeds a lot.
Wrapped it up 20 more minutes into the game. It just felt like Japan wanted this trophy, maybe not, I'm gonna say a little bit more, but they really showed up to win this. Yeah.
I was playing basketball once, got the rebound under the rim, and I did a little hezzy, mm-hmm. right? Guy jumped, so I was like, all right, I could go off kilter and kind of avoid him coming down and get a little bit of easy layup, and he kind of bent forward and he tried to get out of the way, and his mouth met the top of my head. Mm. And I had teeth marks from his top teeth in my head. But how that got there is it went through his bottom lip and into the top of my head. So my wife's like, we're going to the hospital, AIDS test, you know, because you never know. You know, she's a nurse. She's like, every test. Get every test. By the way, this was coaches versus parents. I'm like, this girl's dad's just running around, you know, doing dirt. But it is what it is. You got to take every test. But they were like, we don't know how the teeth ended up. And I was like, oh, maybe blah, blah, blah. I saw this guy. The guy, all his teeth got like knocked out and he bit through his bottom lip. He had like bandages galore on his bottom lip. His
luckily for Heaps, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, my recovery was they put the glue because they couldn't staple. They wanted to staple it, but then you have to, it's whatever. It's worth. Mm. So they put the glue in, like, you'll heal in a few days. This guy, we did months of recovery, bro. It was crazy. Or weeks, really.
Incredible. And he didn't win a SheBelieves Cup.
No.
Embarrassing.
Well, she believes he got AIDS, bro. It was good. My wife's like, we're getting a herpes test and ain't that, bro? It was crazy. But
are you cheating on me? Yeah, I'm playing basketball.
You know how nurses are. Nurses are, give them all of it. Every test.
All right, let's wrap up there, everybody. Thank you so much.
And if you wrap up, you don't get AIDS.
Hey, if anything, we're educational.
If that makes one person go out and get a test, then it was worth it.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Cooligans. We appreciate it. Shout out to everybody who watched and joined the Patreon and watched the roast. Carter, did you get a chance to watch? Did you like it?
I loved it. Too many shots at San Jose Earthquakes, but other than that, I loved it.
Everybody's going to complain about their home team.
There were a lot of punchlines for San Jose, but if you want to watch an MLS roast, and we did, we had some NWSL,
some lower league jokes in there as well.
It's a great show. So patreon.com/soccercooligans and join, and that's where you can watch it exclusively. It's a really, really fun show that we did in Minnesota. It's if you want a comedy show for, you know, and you're a soccer fan, man, this is the show for you. So
there's not many rooms we can do this type of thing in. If you weren't able to be in the room, hopefully you get to watch it because I think you really love it.
Exactly. And as always, make sure you follow, like, subscribe at Soccer Cooligans everywhere. Hit us up on Blue Sky. That's where everybody's moving to. The whole soccer community is moving to Blue Sky. You can't even say anything on Twitter. I had retweeted Jesse Marsh's speech.
Oh, well, you knew what that was.
I knew. I'm just saying. I'm just, like, it's fine. I'm just saying that this is the
discourse.
The discourse is just somebody called us grown up theater kids because we were saying like it was good of Jesse Marsh to say that, and it's just like. Who is he's like, who the hell is Jesse Marsh to be talking? And I was like, are you even a real? This is not a real person. No, there's no way this is a real person.
No, it's a 12-year-old Russian just smoking a cigarette, holding an AK, giggling to himself as AI translates what he's saying.
Exactly.
To post.
At soccercooligans.com on Blue Sky. So get over there ASAP. All right, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Take care. Peace.
Love you guys.